When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Professional podcast, the place for people in between beginner and master of craft and career. Today I have my first guest, my good friend Joel Stephen Fleming. How are you, buddy?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm real good. I'm real excited to have you on the show. Thanks for being my first guest.
Thanks for having me, man.
Now, Joel is a Brisbane-based director, writer, producer, and filmmaker associated with 13th Street Films. Is there anything you would adjust to that description?
I would like to be a jack of all trades. We're now doing plays.
Really?
So we jumped into that for short and sweet this year.
Yes, you have.
So we just keep adding more strings to the bow, as they say, creatively. Yeah, podcaster as well. So I don't know. Yeah, anything like in the creative field we're kind of into as a small company in Brisbane. Yeah.
Mm. So your podcast, by the way, which I will plug in at the end, is inside the actor's studio apartment, yes?
That's correct.
And make sure you have a listen to that one after this. So we'll jump right in. Now, you are some of the people that you work with, and a lot of the people you've met have been through uni.
Yeah.
So where did you study?
So Griffith University at South Bank in Brisbane has a specialized film school, all sorts of classes and really high level equipment and teachers with great experience. So it's probably, I'd say, one of the best places to go in Brisbane for film school.
And when did you study again?
We finished 2017, I think. So I think 15 to 17, 3-year course.
Mm. And you focused, did you want to be a director the whole time you were there, or did that come later on through the process of studying? Or
for me, it did. I've been doing like film related stuff, kind of self-taught as a teenager already, back in the early days when none of this tech was any good and your programs would crash and all that stuff. But I've always been interested in creative writing as well. So for me, it's always like a writer director. I have never directed someone else's script until literally tomorrow. I am doing that. So it's going to be a first and it's going to be interesting. But yeah, it comes from creative, need to like tell a story. In film school, you do kind of specialize, group assignment to group assignment, which is little short films, but you start to specialize more in second year and through and, do specific classes for what you're into. So I did, everything that was writing and directing, I did.
Because that actually is leading me to my first kind of like proper question, which is about uni. Because there is there's an opinion I've heard a lot of more recently, which is that for creative arts jobs and careers, that uni is not necessarily necessary. Okay. And I wanted to know, in comparison to like a doctor.
Yeah, okay.
And I actually still am trying to figure out if I agree with that or not. But I wanted to know what your thoughts on university in general, but mainly in regards to what you're doing. Because from what it sounds like, you were already doing stuff when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what, if there was a main thought or decision that was, I'm going to study this.
Yeah, so I think, obviously, if you're a doctor, there's higher stakes, if you've got people who can die on your watch or a surgeon or something like that. But as an artist, there's a lot of, I get you that there's, it's kind of more of a debate because there's so many different ways to make art and, you know, styles of every art. I think for me, you know, the passion is the first thing. It's the forefront. If you don't have that, there's no point. You know, you're not going to film school to be rich, especially in Australia. You're not going to think that you're going to be a millionaire because of film school. It's got to be very passion driven. For me, I was always into it since I was a kid. You know, kind of long sideways journey to get there as a mature age student to actually do it. And I think it really, you know, changed everything for me, like professional level, you know, coming up as far as whatever I didn't know that I thought I could learn on the internet or whatever. There was so many things. And then the other great thing about like film specific degrees is you need to get, have that network of crew to interact and work yeah. with and help. You'll help each other. You'll volunteer time to each other's things.
Mm.
And so that's what I have now, is like a great group of colleagues, and that's really important.
Mm.
As well as that, like, kind of, can that network that the uni teachers have and all the experiences you can do through that, like going trips overseas and things like that. So I think it's necessary, more so in film than other arts maybe, but that's from my limited knowledge of, you know, how the other arts industries work.
Yeah. Would you say that all or the majority of kind of your core crew are people you met either at or through uni?
Yeah, definitely. So basically, I think most of our crew, yeah, probably like 90% is always from our exact uni. And then you'd say like 70% of that is our, you know, cohort year level. So you get really bonded with those guys because you go through this shared experience and this, you know, especially in third year, you do these bigger projects that take a lot of time and preparation, and you all work on each other's again, and you're all exhausted, and it's a very like a family style thing. And that's what I always say about film crews, is you become like a weird family between the cast and the crew and everyone, and you just force together and you have to get along. And that's, you know, that the bond is like created just like a family.
Yeah. Cause, that's fairly true for, I reckon a lot of actors, too, that they form like theater groups with a lot of the people they go to uni with. And even like most of the acting friends that I know that are interested in screen or that do screen as well, go out of their way to try and do Griffith stuff, because it was actually, I remember seeing Shani Tones doing a film. I can't remember what year, and I thought I have to do a Griffith grad film because they're really high quality. I even felt odd calling them student films, because student films have a bit of a bad rap, and sometimes for a good reason. But those, yeah, but
it's
those,
a cliched name, like when you hear student film, people are like, oh.
But that's what drew me to try and act with Griffith students, and then that's how I met Jake Doak, and that's sort of how we got in touch a little bit.
Yeah.
And even how that's actually hit the first time I experienced Ryan Hance.
Very
saw him in a Griffith film, and I thought, I want to be friends with
that's
that
guy. That's a big personality kid, yeah. Ryan Hance.
so yeah, even if it's not entirely the, because I personally feel that way, that with a lot of creative arts at uni, the networking can, it will sometimes should be the main thing, because it's hard to make it a curriculum. It's hard to make a creative arts career out of an academic process, I find.
Definitely. With film, because there is an industry to it, obviously in Australia it's limited, there's so many different roles, so you can really learn things that you wouldn't learn on smaller, you know, indie sets. Because you do get that kind of experience of a big set that where they do those grad films, and you have like 20 people in your crew, so you're doing all these different tasks. And also what Griffith does a lot better than other unis, as far as I know, is you make a lot more films. So you learn from doing, you make the mistakes, next time you try and fix that mistake, you make a new one, and you know, that's just life. That's like any schooling, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't devalue education. You know, you learn a lot from all these different experienced you know, tutors. Some are very theory based and get you into like the, you know, psychology of film and the great films of Europe and things that like most young people these days would never think to watch that, you know, they kind of force fed them.
Yeah.
All the Scandinavian filmmakers and the Fellinis and whoever else from those 50s and up kind of postmodern era.
Yeah.
And that stuff they learn, techniques and ideas they never would have contemplated, you know, and thought to put in their own little shorts before.
Yeah. We had the same thing with actors and plays and films from decades and sometimes centuries ago that we would have never kind of stumbled across otherwise, being curated by people that, you know, work in that industry, and that's the thing that they love, and that's not necessarily something you can teach yourself on the internet.
Yeah, it's there's so many things that, you know, good about the technology, but there's something to that connection of like engaging even in the group experience of, we watch this film that most of the kids are like, what the fuck did I just watch? And then you, okay, well, let's talk about it. What did you think? Why did you hate it or whatever? And that's, there's something to, you know, be said about that real life group engagement, that tribal experience, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So while you were there, you had slightly different focuses, mostly writing and directing.
Mm-hmm.
And now with a lot of the things you do with 13th Street, and the different avenues you're exploring, like plays, for example. I'm curious how you're, as a director, maybe more so, but how has writing and producing affected your directing, or kind of vice versa? Because you do a few different things, I'm sure there's a carryover and a bit of bleeding over into the other things.
Definitely.
Have you found that it's more valuable to, not even just on a base level, but in a slightly deeper level, learn more about those other crafts and actually involve yourself in doing them?
Definitely. So because we run 13th Street as a business, we try and make profit just so we can make what we want to make, and make the art, make the narrative stuff that we are passionate about. So I've had to learn a lot about the kind of ins and outs of serious, organized producing of, you know, getting permits and scheduling and budgeting and all the things that a director usually doesn't want to do. And I still don't, you know, enjoy it, but, you know, you have to do it to achieve the result of like making whatever it is. So we shoot television commercials and stuff like that with big budgets and complicated sets and stunts and da, da, da. You've got to learn, you know, the ins and outs. Otherwise, if we were paying producer, we'd be losing all our profit margin. So basically, Sean and I, my partner, do a lot of extra jobs and take on, you know, wear a lot of different hats to get anything made that we make, just like, you know, Riggleton or something that we're producing.
Yeah.
As a little company, that's a huge scope project. Takes a lot of different like skills, and you trying to pick them up as you go, and it's just work hours, just the passion to work harder and longer than anyone else to make it happen.
Yeah, because it seems like from an actor's perspective, there's been this long I'm not sure if it's a trope or what it is, but the triple threat, right? The singer, actor, dancer, or whatever. Basically, you can't be a one-trick pony. If you are a one-trick pony, you'd be the best damn trick pony there is.
Yeah.
And for you, that seems... I'm curious whether that was more out of desire and curiosity, or whether it was more out of necessity, or if that depends on the thing.
It's... Well, in a way, when you're a director, if you... especially at an indie scale, you have to be across everything anyway. So you're partly involved in everything the producer's doing, and they're talking to you about every aspect of the film, usually. That's, you know, in their kind of wheelhouse. You're talking to the DOP about their area, the production designer, whatever. So you kind of are always this overseeing figure. So it's just doing more of that stuff. And it is a necessity, really, for doing the producing stuff. I don't have the passion for it. And I can be organized and get things done, but I'm not the, you know, the best with that kind of structure, because I am a creative weirdo that wants to, you know, go off on a tangent and write for 10 hours on my new idea, instead of do the paperwork thing that I have to do. So, you know, there's like the thing of disciplining myself and making myself more professional in a way as well.
Cool. So, yeah, some of them are more the desire to do that, and some of them are more the discipline to make things happen.
Yeah, I'd say like if, you know, no one else is going to do it in most cases, then I have to because I want the end result. It's just that grind of doing that bit to get to do the bit I love, which is directing guys like you, getting in that scene on set, and I love the energy of set, and that's where I want to be. If I could direct every day, I would.
Cool. Alrighty. Well, I've had the first-hand experience of being involved in 13th Street social media.
Mm-hmm.
From a combination of my face is in some of the stuff.
Yeah.
And also being involved in promoting things and sharing things. And I guess this is almost a job in of itself because there are people that do promotion and marketing. And for you, I'm curious what you've learned about utilizing social media as a maker. I'm just going to use that term as a broad umbrella. And how do you like to convey instructions? Sounds too harsh, but to share
like a message.
Yeah, share the message with your cast and crew to then and share that with an audience, because the for example, me working with you, the cast of Riggleton and Summer School have all been involved in the social media. They're not, you're not being whipped to whip ups and stuff, but you know, the group effort and getting more eyes on things, and just the difficulty of social media attention in these days. So what have you learned since making the step to properly promoting and properly marketing your stuff?
So heaps of stuff. So that's, again, back to indie filmmaking, like getting all you guys on board to actually help push the product is essential to help it succeed. And you even see it with big movie stars now, like The Rock will have in his contract, you know, you need to post about the film 3 times this week when it's, you know, like the release of the film, you know. They use it to like the top level actors now, so it goes all the way down to us.
Yeah, because like Jake Gyllenhaal got Instagram for Spider-Man, Joaquin Phoenix got Instagram for Joker.
Yeah, it's almost like they have to. Because some of them are those really arty actors that aren't interested in self-promoting or putting their abs online or whatever people do on Instagram. And I'm almost the same. Like, I kind of had it to muck around with when I was, you know, when it first came out, but I never really put anything on there except my cute dog pictures. So, like, changing to, like, okay, this is, like, a really powerful marketing tool was a lot to learn. We did a lot of research. Kind of online, talk to other indie filmmakers about how they did it, and also you just kind of learn from seeing other things on Facebook and Instagram of projects in, you know, Brisbane or Australia. The marketing, I talked to one of the actors from Family Law, who I know, Shu.
Yeah,
she gave me like a kind of rundown of how they did it and how they as actors were told to promote it and the things to share. They would send them assets and say, like, this is the thing to share, don't just sit, share your picture from set, you know, your selfie or whatever. They want this specific thing, the color scheme, palette, the right font, and all the things that sell like what the show is. So that's part of the thing we took on, is like, you know, we make content, Sean like does it up, and we give it to you guys, like, this is your, you know, character shot, use this specific thing, and that really helps you stay on like brand of like what is this show, what's the feel of it, you know, who are these characters, and you know, what's the tone, is it funny, is it dramatic, whatever it is, that's all wrapped up into that. And then like as far as posting, you just try not to annoy people by posting too much, but you want to keep it in their eye and mindset enough, so we kind of post about 3 times a week for content when we're really running a campaign. Like right now we're fundraising, so we'll do more so. And then if it was just kind of a keeping it in people's mind, so then they want to watch the online content, then maybe you do 1 post a week.
Yeah. Right. Now, I want to get back into some questions. And this is tying back into some questions about marketing and social media and everything.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned from your experiences with pitching? And do you have any advice for others, like first time pitching, or any differences between a pilot episode or a web series or anything? Because you're delving into different avenues, I wonder if there's any difference in your approach. to pitching.
Okay. So we have pitched at 13th Street. We've pitched to, you know, basically all the networks you can imagine in Australia. So including Stan and Netflix. One time for summer school, which was a project in 2018, if you don't know it. We had like a big panel and we had to pitch to like all of them at once. So you're sitting there like nervous trying to remember like your little speech without, you know, looking at any pieces of paper. So you seem legit. And you've got like six high powered content people that are like all just judging every fiber of your being. So that was fun. It can be intimidating, of course, pitching. First of all, just like anything, you really need to know what your thing is, you know, what is your film project, product, whatever the thing is. If you're on Shark Tank, it'd be the same thing, right? You got to know what it is and why anyone else would want it. So that's in film is knowing your audience. So you really need to research who you're in front of with pitching. You know, if you're talking to, say, SBS, who we pitched to last year as well, they are... I pitched this summer school. I pitched this show. It's for like kind of young people up to about 40-year-olds. It's a key demo. And so they're like, great, blah, blah, blah. We like this. We like that. We'll watch the pilot link. But just so you know, our core audience is 60 years and older. And then we're like, oh yeah, of course. Like who watches normal TV anymore?
Yeah.
So unless you're specifically pitching to like four online like channels, like, you know, how they have ABC iView or things like that. Then you need to be really careful to even think, is this show, you know, anything that a network would be interested in? Because if it doesn't appeal to the older demographic, at least like 40s and over, then they won't be interested, basically, because that's who watches their channels and who buys things from the advertisers.
So knowing your target market, but also knowing their target market to make sure they match.
Because you might not even... You might literally be a waste of time.
Yeah.
Unless they're looking for online stuff or their new online program. You know how kind of every channel's getting into on-demand stuff?
Yeah.
Unless that's what the meeting's about, then you might not even be worth pitching to ABC or SBS. If they're looking for television content, then you need to make it for the audience that's watching. So that's pretty simple. Knowing what your thing is and then who to sell it to. So if that doesn't suit... then you want to be approaching different avenues. The hardest thing is for like Netflix and Stan and stuff, you can't really get in the door with them. Even though, you know, everyone young, that's all we watch pretty much and where we would want to put our content. There's not really a way in with them unless they come to you.
Yeah.
That occasion when I got in front of them was part of a film festival where we got to pitch to all of them. It was like a special event. So other than that and kind of competitions run through the... directors and writers guilds through actor, things like that. That's another way to pitch to those kind of executives.
Actor as in AACTA.
Yeah,
actor,
that's one of them. Yeah. Things like that. Anything that's run by a big organization or a fund, you know, like a funding body or a directors or writers guild kind of thing. That's a way to get in front of those. Otherwise, you can't really get, you know, you can't approach them. You can't email anyone. So
yeah,
your doors that are open all the time are ABC and SBS. So... as far as just getting your content to someone that matters, that's the only ones you can get to it when you're really at the ground level and no one knows your name yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then just think about if they'd even want your content, basically.
Would you, so maybe with the demographic thing, maybe with the, so for example, do you have pitches that you sort of keep on file? Let's say like you get, because you might not have the opportunity now to talk to Netflix or whatever.
Yep.
But you find out that you're going to be able to, and you've got that one or two pitches. You've got the one or two pitches that you want for them. Do you just sort of keep them ready, or are you always focusing more so on your latest?
No, like with writers, they recommend you have like multiple projects, and the more you can get like kind of written to a level where they're kind of ready to go, it's better. So at the moment, we've got our new show, Wriggleton, which you obviously are in. We've got the old stuff for summer school. If it came up, if someone's looking for that kind of thing, we've got all our pitch documents and stuff written.
Yeah.
I've got my first feature that I finished writing that's in early draft stages, but I could pitch that, you know, right now if I had to.
Yeah.
So if you're a creator and a writer, you need to know all your different products and how to sell them and the differences between them and who they're for. That I would recommend that. And the way you do that like the industry standard is having like a one page
hmm.
document. So that'll be like your pitch doc. You can sometimes send that one pager out unsolicited and they might actually read it because it's one page, you know,
yeah.
glance over it. If something catches their eye, they might read it properly. Then they might ask for the script. So that's something, there's to a talent of writing that too. And it's like the specific, you know, concise bits of information like that log line that's got to hook them in and that short synopsis to see, oh, is this going to go anywhere? And so there's all these steps to try and keep them reading. So if you want, you could always post a link to one of our examples of that.
Yeah, I'll add everything. I'll add some stuff in the show notes, some examples and some links to some of Joel's material as a bit of a template or an example.
Yeah, so
and
we
for
did...
anyone who's looking for a pitch.
We did that course. I don't know if you remember. We ran a course basic, like teaching storytelling for actors.
Hmm.
So we did covered a lot of that in there. So if you want, I can just give you a link to some of the documents we made.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll put that in the show notes.
Cool.
So how did 13th Street Films come around? Did that arise out of you found your core crew and you all got along and you wanted to kind of give yourselves a name and kind of codify, or was that how was that
Yeah, so it started with basically me returning because I used to live in Europe, did a couple of commercials and stuff there, went back here and thought, how can I get network and get into the community? I know I'll just go to uni and I'll upskill and do it at the same time. So that's why I did that at like 29, so I was like one of the oldest people there.
Joel looks very young for his age. He told me how old he was once and I didn't believe him.
They never do. And I'm hoping that will just continue for my whole life, that I'll never look as old as I am.
Yeah, so you're not the only baby face.
So you know Chris Slater, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like the only one who was like anywhere like older than me, and he was like 50, so I was like, yes, at least I'm not the oldest guy, and then we all call him dad, even me, I can get away with it. So
Chris is lovely.
Yeah, he's a great bloke. But sorry, what was the question again?
The question was the origin of the...
Oh, okay. So basically, I was like, okay, so I need like a brand name, like a production company to start with. And we made this first year film, which you can see on YouTube, called Jehovah. It's a horror comedy. And it just really hit at festivals. We chucked it into festivals. Like, why not? You know? And I was putting my own money behind it because I'm like, yeah, it's pretty, like, turned out pretty good. And it really hit and picked up, and it ended up playing about 15, 16 festivals over like a year or so period. So it's like, oh, we need like a production company name. If we're going to get things played at a festival, we kind of want to start like the basics of branding and stuff. So 13's my favorite number. I'm a tragic sports guy. Unlike most filmmakers, love sports. Played basketball my whole life. That's my jersey number. You choose your number in basketball.
So I
chose it. You know, the unlucky 13.
Yeah.
So I chose it because no one else would ever want it.
Mm.
Kind of weird thing that I was like, oh, I don't believe in superstitious stuff. I was an atheist from a very young age at a Catholic school. So I was number 13. So that's where the name, it doesn't really have any deeper meaning. I just like, oh yeah, that's cool.
Mm.
Yeah, and so that's where the name came from. Simple, like kind of smart, memorable name was the idea. Just like, you know, how you when you think of a band name.
Yeah.
So like it appealed to me. I thought it's simple and memorable, you know. People can process what it is. A lot of weird like production companies have odd names that you can't spell.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do people Google you? Like, it's a bad move. So that was one of the things I thought about. And I did it, and then it kind of expanded that I kept working with the same great group of people, the same kind of sound guy, the same production designer, which is Sean, and we kind of all became this group organically. I kept wanting those people because they perform well in the crew.
Hmm.
And it just grew and grew and kept making a lot of content outside what we had to do for uni. So we were making a lot more than most other students and learning faster, making mistakes, making different stuff. So that one of the things I set myself as a goal at uni was to make different films, not necessarily the exact thing I wanted to make, like push myself. So we made like a one shot film. We made a 360, you know, like a VR film when it was very early days technology. And it was like a $400 camera. It's like bloody terrible quality. It looks like 360p kind of, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's because it's stretching that HD over like all the areas of the frame. So we kind of co-directed that, a couple of mates and me, and it was really fun. And we did this roulette scene where they're all the characters at a round table. So it worked really well for the shape of the thing where you could watch each character at any time. So things like that, I tried kind of every genre, you know. I did a horror, did a drama, did a thriller, did a, you know, job. And like, I kind of went away from comedy the whole of uni to try all those things, but I've always loved comedy, and now I'm back into like almost doing entirely comedy unless employed to do something else.
Yeah.
Because it's just where I kind of, I'm awkward and I am loud and obnoxious, and that's where I belong.
Especially if you're writing material and you're kind of playing to your strengths and you're improving on what you've done before and everything. It's actually funny you say that about your 13th Street. When I applied for Short and Sweet the last year or the year before, basically I had a one man show and I did everything in it, and I was the writer, the composer and all that. So I had to come up with a theatre group name or something like that, and I did the exact same thing of like, I called it Orphan Collective because I thought it was clever because there was only one person in it, which is me.
That's actually cool though too. It's got a good ring to it, you know, those certain names that like stand out. That sounds like a band.
And that's funny because that it stemmed out of like my, because I've been a musician for a long time. You do those, you like, the somethings, that'd be a cool band name. you do that forever. So I wanted to get a bit bit broader in terms of some things in your personal and professional life, and I was curious about what change in your life in the last year or so, it doesn't have to be that strict, has most positively impacted your life.
Okay, so that's easy. So it's definitely it's personal and professional. So Shan that I keep talking about is my girlfriend, and we probably got together about a year and a half ago or something like that. And it just, we'd always worked together in film and been friends. She's a production designer and also a writer as well. And we just always got along really well. And then like kind of things all fell into place where it became romantic. And I think just as far as like positive influence on my life, someone like her is just, amazingly creative. So therefore just inspires me as well. And just to such a kind, funny, you know, lovely person as well. So she's really just a slam dunk, according to me. We can do film, we can talk about film all day, and it doesn't drive her insane, which is rare, because you know, people with relationships outside that art bubble, it can really be a strain. So that's one thing. And yeah, I just think us working together and our personal life, it's just been awesome and made me more positive and made me kind of more hungry to pursue my goals and everything. So that's got to be it. Got to give her props.
Bouncing off her.
Don't show her this though.
Yeah. Sorry, no one will watch this. No one cares. Now, who or what do you think of when I say success?
So what do I think of? That's an interesting
question. Could be a person, could be a project, could be time.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's like a myriad of things for me, because I am like into sports and stuff. So if I think of something that's like pure like greatness, think of someone like Michael Jordan. It's just like an absolute phenomenon. Like clearly head and shoulders above any peer in his field, yeah?
And physically.
There's taller ones. Really? And shows about most of people in the world. Yeah, but like people like that, filmmaking wise, someone like Stanley Kubrick, who was such a unique thinker and just such an auteur and driven, and just like, no, trust me, this is like gonna be awesome. And everyone's like, oh god, he's crazy. You know, there's stories of him doing 20 takes of someone like opening a door or putting a prop down or whatever that he had, because it wasn't right yet, you know, and like that kind of egomaniacal, but like also brilliant. I guess that's what I kind of aspire to be without offending anyone, is like being that kind of obsessed with perfection. The idea of perfection is like obviously kind of ridiculous and redundant, but also it's like something to chase, right? And what's a human without some goal and struggle? Like, what do you do? I always think it's like sad, you know, you think of success, like people think, oh, if I won the lotto, I'd be happy. And I think that's the worst possible thing for you if that's the way you think.
Yeah.
So success for me would be more artistically driven, because it's not defined by, you know, you can't just say, oh, Michael Jordan, he won, he's the best. It's not the same system with art, you know. For me, I'm thinking about it as my own fulfillment, and then like how I can positively affect others, like in my kind of inner circle and friends, family, whatever.
Yeah.
Which sounds cliche, but I think it, whatever makes you feel rewarded, to me, it's always also the relentless pursuit of improvement.
Mm.
And like, I always want to make the next idea. I get excited about the next idea while I'm finishing this idea.
Mm.
And, but I also at the same time want this idea to be amazing. And, you know, you never really can make the film exactly how it was in your head. And that's kind of the chase the dragon thing for a writer director is like, oh, the next one, I'm going to make it closer to what I imagine.
Mm.
And you want to just pull that margin in and eventually hopefully get to that level where you have industry money and you can kind of almost do exactly what you set out to do, which would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that answer it? I don't know.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I totally get what you mean. So we've mentioned this a few times throughout tonight, but I wanted to talk about it a bit more directly. So at the moment, you're in the midst of a fundraiser for Wriggleton. Can you explain a bit about what Wriggleton is? And
so Wriggleton is a comedy mockumentary series. It's about a small town that could be anywhere in Australia, and the kind of theme and the core of the show is about globalization and like a loss of identity. So that sounds serious, but it's really fun and silly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the theme. That's the core. So this town's kind of bankrupt, in trouble, and they've got this just useless mayor who's our main character. So he's Clint Wriggleton. He's basically royalty. He was, you know, born to be mayor. His dad was mayor. His granddad was mayor, and his great grandfather before him, who started the town. And he's just got this job that he is ill-equipped to kind of do. And it's kind of that, you know, show like The Office or Parks and Rec, where it's this person just kind of out of their depth, and that's where the comedy lies. And then from there, we extrapolate into the townspeople, which, you know, there's 13 main characters, which sounds crazy. So a big ensemble cast, all these different weird characters, all the kind of local legends you meet in a country town. Maybe someone's like exactly the kind of person you know. He might be like your brother or your uncle or something like that. Or you might find them completely ridiculous and bizarre. But either way, it's really fun. You know, we've got a town cop who thinks he's like, you know, the biggest detective in New York, and he runs around with his sheriff's hat on and with his hand on his gun, even though he's solving trivial matters like missing shoes. And, you know, we've got a teenage DJ here, which is played by Matt, who, you know, thinks he's
DJ Maxitrillion.
Thinks he's Armin Van Buren or one of those, whoever the cool DJ is to reference these days, I wouldn't know.
Some German house techno
guy. Yeah, some Dutch guy or whatever. But so there's this a madhouse of this small town, and then the thing that it's actually about is, will this town lose its identity, and what makes all those people unique and sell out? Or will they find a way to come together and keep the town alive? And, you know, that uniqueness that you find in a country town that you don't find in like big cities doesn't all look the same. You know, everywhere we go here, there's like the same coffee shops, the same clothing stores, and everything's really just whitewashed and boring. So that's what I loved about the idea, was that's keeping that identity of what makes a town. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we're fundraising. We've got less than 2 weeks to go. If you want to come to the premiere, if you're in Brisbane, it's at New Farm Cinemas, August 8th. So if you buy a ticket to that for $20, see a lot of our content, meet us, the cast, a lot of other filmmakers. It's a good networking event as well.
I'll be there if that's of any benefit.
So yeah, it's only $20. Come and check it out. And that goes towards helping us make the rest of the show. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. I'll add links in the show notes below. So, Joel, where can people find you? Where can they find 13th Street online? Where can they say hello?
All right. Awesome. So on Facebook, it's just 13th Street Films, so at 13th Street Films if you're tagging it. Same with Welcome to Wriggleton. It's at Welcome to Wriggleton. You can also probably find that through 13th Street Films, which is easier to type in. On Instagram, at Joel Steven with the PH. That's my, old school Instagram. And then we also have one for Welcome to Wriggleton as well, if you want to check out that content. We have a bunch of great little sketches and little short clips to give you a taste of what the show's like, if you're interested, as well as like a big teaser scene that we made as well, that's part of the pilot. So you can check that out.
So I'll have links to the Facebook pages, the Instagram pages, Joel's website, 13thstreetfilms.com.
Mm-hmm.
His podcast, Inside the Actor's Studio Apartment, that's on the 13th Street Film website as well. As well as, what platforms do you have that on? You have that on Apple Play, whatever the...
You can get it on iTunes. You can subscribe, and you can just listen to it through SoundCloud. And we post a link on our page if you want to follow us. Every 2 weeks, there's a new episode. So this week, we just released one talking about all things horror movies, which usually is a fan favorite, so it should be a good one.
Hmm. And since we've got a bit of extra time, so 13th Street Films, you also do... a couple of other, like, so you do some sketches every now and then, and mm-hmm. you do showreel scenes and things like that. Are there any other, so if people want to get involved with you in that regard, what is there anything you offer in that regard? Or
yeah, so we can do showreel scenes, so if emerging actors who need more content, you know, we get a lot of theater actors who like, I want to get into film, but I don't really have anything on, you know, tape, on video. So we do scenes from only 800. So usually people do two-hander scenes. They put in 400 each, which is nothing. And you get our crew, which are amazing.
Yeah.
Award-winning filmmakers to shoot your scene for half a day. And yeah, that we usually have it all done and handed in to you in a couple of weeks after the shoot. So it's a really great simple service. You can do that.
Do you do reels as well still?
As in like editing? Yeah, you can. Yeah, we can edit showreels. We can do self-tapes for you if you want direction or if you just want someone to shoot it.
Joel cut one of my first
yeah, your showreels. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always yeah. available for any of that stuff. Yeah, if you're an actor also, we'll probably be running our course again, which is Film 101. This is basically teaching you the skills to make your own content. A lot of actors these days with social media and everything, they want to get into making their own content, so we can teach you all the basic ways to do that and all the different levels from, you know, shooting it on your iPhone to hiring a little group like us if you want to shoot something at like a professional level quality.
So that information is usually on Facebook?
Yeah, yeah, that's all through our Facebook. It's also a whole course outline on our website.
Cool.
And, you know, an actor who came through Film 101 last year in November, we're shooting his horror film this week.
Cool.
So it's got to that stage. He's did 7 drafts, perfected the script. He's excited to shoot it. So he's, you know, putting up the budget for it and he's starring in it and we're shooting it over the next 2 nights. So it's going to be really exciting and cool to see something come through the program and become, you know, come to life as a film.
Yeah, nice. Cool. Well, thanks, Super. Thanks, Heaps, for joining me tonight. Thanks for coming around. And all the links and pages and information will be in the show notes below, above whatever platform this is on. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.